Welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and today I would like to thank you all for being here. We have special guest Eric Baumgartner, and he is here to share his wisdom about the fall season, herbal blend that he's created, and how to be present with change. Without further ado, let's dive in with Eric. Eric, I want to thank you for being here today. I'm excited to dive into the topic of change, being that we're in the season of fall in the North American Northern American hemisphere, and there's a lot of upheaval collectively on the planet right now. I would love for you to relate to the listeners the power of change and what's possible in these pivotal times that are uprising internally and externally.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I love this. I love the space that you hold, and I love the questions and the conversation, and it just feels really safe and beautiful and sacred, and I appreciate what you what you're bringing. So thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome.
Change is hard and scary, and change is also our essence, right? It's like we are these dynamic bodies and beings, and we live in a universe that's not static. There's nothing really static about it, and yet we tend to kind of gather in the gathering places where things move a little slower and where it feels a little more safe and constant, and we tend to kind of pause in the comfortable places, or what we feel like are the comfortable places. And I think that's, you know, that's good and that's natural, and yet there's this constant. The one thing that is constant is that there's change, and that even, you know, what we know is homeostasis in the body, which is that perfect balance between, you know, all the moving parts, is not a static thing. It's not like we just get to that homeostasis and then we stay there. It's a constant flow and flux and adjustment to all the things that we have to respond to every day and in every moment. So, you know, my relationship to change is probably not unlike yours, in the sense that, you know, when things do come up, especially big things, worldly things, you know, environmental things, or, you know, we have political changes that are happening, they feel really scary, and the inkling is to want things to stay the same, and to resist change. And yet, you know, again, change is our essence. So I think we're in a moment in the world where change is happening, and it might not look like we think we want it to look, but things are changing. You know, we in some ways have to trust in the process of change, and that it is part of our nature, and that, you know, it's not just as, you know, the sun rising doesn't stay in one place, it keeps moving. We aren't going to stay right where we are right now, but that we are in a process of change, and I think we've all been praying for change, and so change is an answer to our prayers too. Seasons change is a nice way to, you know, to distill this, maybe this conversation, into something that we can focus on every day. and looking at, you know, how our seasons are changing, is always like a metaphor that I go back to in my life and in my work. And, you know, when I'm looking at things that I'm facing, is we can look at that yearly cycle as a metaphor for things that are happening. So, you know, right now we're moving into the transition into fall. Things are moving inward, right? And, you know, leaves are falling and weather is cooling and days are shortening. And all of that is natural. And there's a moment maybe about a month ago or a little more, because I live in Ojai where it's really hot, where I felt summer kind of leaving, right? Mm. And there's like a, but wait, I don't want summer to be gone. Like summer's something I look forward to every year, and summer's when I'm with my kids the most, and summer is, you know, there's this relative sense of freedom, and there's a certain kind of abundance, and there's a certain kind of light and energy, and it's just, you know, you crave it, and yet then it passes so quickly. And so there's that, like, you know, moment that I would liken to, you know, in some ways to a moment where we are right now in our world or in our lives, where we're like, oh, there's something that we felt safe and good in, and now we're going to have to let go of that because there's change. There's a different season that's coming in.
Hmm.
And yet, you know, when I get over that letting go of summer, then I go, oh, but like, I love fall. There's like all this beauty in fall, and I actually feel better in fall. I feel better when the weather cools and as the nights get longer, and, you know, I can actually be outdoors more. And so there's all these blessings, and I love the turning inward that happens. You know, I there's like a knowing that the seasons don't stop. So even though I'm in fall and now I love fall and I love all the things of fall, like it's already moving by. Like now we're in mid-November and fall is like on its way almost out, and I'm still, you know, barely just recovering from losing summer. So, I mean, right? We just have this constant kind of like attaching to things and wanting them to almost stay, like, ooh, I like it how it is right now. And yet change is this constant for us. And so, so we were talking just before we got on the call about the new herbal formula that I just created, which is a seasons formula. It's called Seasons Change. And it's created kind of in that spirit, knowing that really in all kinds of transition, what we seek is comfort. We want to be able to continue to have our comfort, even as change is pushing us out of our comfort zone, right? And right. I think we all know that, like, the greatest growth and the greatest teaching and learning tends to happen in those uncomfortable places where we're in change, right? And where we're pushed to adapt, and where we're pushed to draw on the wisdom that we've accumulated in our lives. And we're pushed to trust ourselves and to find our center, even as, you know, we could say the winds of the season are starting to blow and the weather's getting cold, and, you know, it looks different than it did in summer, but you know what to do. If you kind of just tune into your inner wisdom, you go, oh, okay, I need to layer up. I need to, you know, turn in a little bit more, whether that means being a little more indoors or just spending a little more time in your internal spaces. I need to eat warmer food. I need to use warming spices. Like, all of those things are just, they're in us. We know that, and yet we do forget it. And those of us who live in California sometimes can ignore that because we don't have the dramatic seasons change that you do in, you know, more northern states or countries. So, you know, this formula is designed to just support us in transition, to give you something, you know, comforting, and to support the body to adapt more quickly to the changes, because the body also has a hard time, just like our minds and our spirits kind of have a hard time sometimes making these transitions. Like, the body is still in summer mode and we're practically in winter, you know, for some of us.
Mm.
Or, you know, it's like we need to catch up and prepare ourselves for the next season on an ongoing basis, not just be in a reactive mode where like, oh my God, you know, now it's fall and here I was like wearing a tank top and now I'm kind of sick, you know.
Right.
But we're actually preparing in each season for the coming of the next season, like the gathering of the harvest or the, you know, the in Chinese medicine, they say as fall comes that we really need to start, you know, almost like you're layering your body up, right? You're like eating a little more dense and rich foods to add a little layer of warmth onto the body and as we start to turn inward, we're actually focused more on nourishing than say cleansing or moving, but we actually want to feed those deepest parts of our bodies, the kidneys, the adrenals, by slowing down and eating more warming foods and nutrient-dense foods and bone broths and medicinal soups and things like that. So that when winter comes and it is really cold, that we're prepared for it, right?
And so share a little bit on the mirror, like right now, and especially we were talking about comfort, how to have kind of your tools in place to create stability within the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep that psyche in balance that's grasping for solid ground, but realizing that we're in motion, especially maybe right now in that fall season, as an example.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because I think as we feel things moving, we tend to almost default to thinking that things are unstable, right? Mm-hmm. And they can feel really unstable and definitely, you know, we're in a kind of moment where things could feel really unstable. And yet, you know, if you go outside and you put your feet on the earth and you stand on the earth, there's nothing unstable about it. Right. So part of it is just tuning into the bigger cycles that go, oh, like things have been constantly changing. These kinds of things come and go, just like the seasons come and go. And my job is to kind of align with them to some degree so that I'm not, you know, out of season. And I think, you know, comfort is an interesting piece of this. And where we go for comfort is really revealing of, you know, our relationship to change, because, you know, I think we have lost touch in a lot of cases with like how to comfort ourselves and what, you know, what that, or even that that's what we're seeking is comfort. And so, you know, what we tend to gravitate towards is sugar and, you know, alcohol and foods that maybe aren't the healthiest for us, or even, you know, lots of different behaviors and that help us to kind of numb down the intensity of what we're feeling in times of transition because we feel unstable. And so it's interesting, in Chinese medicine they say that sugar and alcohol and wheat and grains, and that they're we call those comfort foods. The reason that they're comforting is because they create a kind of a dampness in the body, and that dampness is almost like putting a blanket on top of, you know, for lack of a better term, like a wet blanket, kind of heavy. It's kind of like, you know, if someone, you imagine like someone putting a big wool blanket over you that was a little bit wet, maybe still warm. So it wasn't like someone putting something wet on you, but like, oh, it's like
cold blanket,
damp, but it's warm. But I, like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, here I am. I'm grounded. I'm kind of warm and cozy. Maybe I don't feel great. I don't feel like I want to get up and do anything, but I'm okay. And that's kind of the effect that those foods have on us. They like ground us a little bit, but they also dampen down what we're feeling. And so there's, you know, that's a natural tendency that we have. And we have that innate wisdom that seeks out a way to have that feeling when things get too intense. Of course, the danger with doing that a lot is then, you know, you start to accumulate dampness in the body, you start to put on weight, or you start to slow down the metabolic processes, and your body starts to not function as well. You have brain fog, you have low energy, you might start feeling kind of depressed. the digestion slows down, and your immunity slows down. So, you know, it's really interesting that what we do is, especially in this season, this is like our season to dampen down and eat sugar and indulge in all these things. And, you know, I think it has somewhat to do with the change in the turn of the year and the anxiety that that brings with transitioning, knowing that there's something ending and dying, which is, you know, 2016, and then something new beginning, which is a little bit unknown, even though, you know, we know that 2017 will come along and not be that different. But still, there's that, you know, there's that anxiety and there's all the change. So we gravitate towards those foods naturally, and yet they really can undermine our ability to be present for the change and to, you know, complete the work that we have to do this year and to be ready to step into the next work, right?
Right. And share some good alternatives, like rather than grasping the sugar,
right,
the alcohol, the grains, what are the good alternatives?
So the Seasons Change Blend that I created is one thing that I think is great, and it's kind of a fun way. It's like a pumpkin spice latte alternative. And I think, you know, we're like naturally we are gravitating towards the right things. Like a pumpkin spice latte on the surface is like the right thing. It's kind of warm. It's kind of creamy. It's spicy, which is all the right things. But then it's, you know, got 40 or 50 grams of sugar and caffeine and, you know, maybe dairy, which might not be good for you. And so, you know, we're close. And so having something like that where you're like, oh, I want something that is that spicy, warm, nourishing thing, but it's not tagged along with all these other things that are kind of undermining my health. So, you know, something warm and spicy is a great idea. Adding a little bit of good quality fats to your diet this time of year is a good idea, which will help to curb sugar cravings. It'll help to increase your feeling that you're satiated during meals. Coconut oil, grass-fed butter, ghee, you know, good quality organic extra virgin olive oil. Those are all good ways to get a little bit of extra fat, which is kind of what your body is craving and doesn't necessarily translate into body fat, but it does create a sense of comfort, and it kind of coats in the way that we want that, you know, we want that little comfort. And and then, you know, beyond just foods, I think that our comfort, you know, really it's kind of firstly acknowledging that that's what we're seeking in this time of year, and during times of transition and during intense and difficult times, or, you know, holidays when you end up being around family, which can be so provocative and so emotional, that you're seeking comfort, that you need comfort, and that comfort doesn't have to come from food or sugar or alcohol, and that you don't really ultimately want to numb yourself out to what you're feeling, but that it's okay to seek comfort while you're in those intense moments, right? So, you know, comforting can look like a hot bath. It can look like taking some time out to write in your journal. It can look like sitting down to meditate, even though that doesn't seem like the logical thing to do, or, you know, it's really busy and hectic and you feel like you don't have time. But it can be so comforting to just take a moment for yourself, right? Looking at this season not only as, you know, we have this, we've kind of created in the midst of the season when we're supposed to do the least and be the most inward, we've created this tradition that is very outward, very social, very exhausting. And so remembering that seasonally what we're supposed to be doing, or the way that we could best align with the seasons of nature, would be to be more inward, to do less, and to, you know, even to speak less, really nourish ourselves in every way possible, because what that's going to do is it's going to set us up for next year. if you can nourish yourself during the fall and winter, then when spring comes, you're actually going to be ready to move outward. That natural blossoming and springing up that happens in nature is going to happen within you. And what I've noticed for myself is that when I don't do that, when spring comes, then I'm clinging to winter. I'm going like, wait a minute, where was my winter? I never stopped. And now it's spring again and summer's coming and I'm already exhausted. I didn't replenish. I didn't restore. So, you know, caring for yourself during the holiday season, looking for different ways to comfort yourself that aren't food and especially aren't things that you know to be unhealthy for you. Because when we comfort ourselves with things that we actually already know are not good for us, it creates this really difficult kind of sense of guilt and shame, right? And it sort of prevents us from taking good care of ourselves, because then we're like, it's almost like then we feel like we need to punish ourselves because we did what we know we shouldn't have done. And so then we're like, well, no, you know, it's like we get really, I don't know, that happens to me at least. I'll just speak for myself, but I think other people
it's just any time that you indulge in stuff because of anxiety or emotions that are probably consuming you, you tend to feel not much better shortly after you indulge in whatever you chose to pass by that.
Yeah, and what it does is it kind of puts that wet blanket over what you feel, and so you're not feeling it as much, but you know it's still there.
Right.
Even if you kind of numb out to it and you can kind of temporarily forget, it's still there. So not only have you done something that's unhealthy for you, but you haven't dealt with the problem. And now the problem is kind of buried under a wet blanket.
Right.
And so to it, now you have to kind of dig for it and unearth it, and it's more work. And, you know, in some ways it can grow.
And so share a little about presence, like in sitting in it. Mm-hmm. The value of sitting in it and being present with it versus maybe running from it or bypassing it?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's, you know, it's easier said than done in some cases. But I heard this brilliant gem from one of my teachers just recently where he was tracing back the origins of the word fear. And the origin of the word phobia. And so a lot of what we feel, you know, can be traced back to a certain kind of fear, right? Anxiety, even sometimes depression will be really a fear of something that we're kind of avoiding. That we, you know, I know for myself when I have something difficult on the horizon, and I'm a pretty good procrastinator, I'll put stuff off if I don't want to do it, or I'm trying to avoid a conflict or something like that. But then it's like it grows and it just makes me feel more and more disempowered. And it, you know, it's like I'm really just hiding from something. I'm avoiding something, avoiding feeling something or saying something or passing through something that I'm fearful will be difficult. So he was tracing fear to phobia, which is the Greek word, phobos. And that Phobos was actually the son of Ares and Aphrodite, two of the Greek, you know, gods and goddesses, and the god of war, the god of beauty, that they're like the goddess of love, beauty, and that the name Phobos actually means fear of knowing oneself. And for me, that just like, it just distilled all those different kinds of versions and different names that we have for fear into this one really simple thing to understand, which is that we're afraid of knowing ourselves. We're afraid of seeing the things that we don't want to see because we, you know, we know that we all have self-destructive behaviors and that we're avoiding things and that there are things that, you know, we are doing that we know we shouldn't be doing and we don't like to look in that mirror. It's scary and it's confrontational. And then, you know, we also, I think, you know, then there's the wisdom of that, you know, there's that great quote that says, you know, our greatest fear is not our darkness, it's our light. We are actually afraid of seeing the light within us as well, right? So there's this, which you know, conceivably is really the bigger fear is that we know we're playing small and that we have something big to do and that we, you know, we're comfortable and we don't want to go through the change that it's going to take to get to that bigger expression of our hearts and our light and our truth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, bringing that back to like our seasonal, you know, seasons are changing. We're going to comfort foods. We're hiding a little bit from knowing ourselves. And so, you know, spending that extra time in the winter, it's like, this is the time when we get to look back at our whole year and we get to let go of the failures and we get to really acknowledge the successes and we get to project a little bit forward into what it is we want to create. And when we don't do that, it creates a whole different kind of anxiety because we're not letting go of the failures, we're holding on to them, we're not actually taking the time to, you know, sit into, envision into what is next for us, and we're, you know, in that sense, we're preventing our light from being able to shine forth, and kind of limiting ourselves to what we have been. And so I just feel like that, you know, that's our natural tendency. I think we can all feel that. That's what we all crave in the winter. And it's really just in some ways our culture that prevents us from doing that, or has, you know, we're kind of societally not, we don't tend towards doing that. That's not what people are doing around us most of the time. So it takes an extra effort to make that space to go in and to just be and be like, okay, what's happening is I'm making peace with the year that is finished and I'm looking forward to the year that's coming. And that's what I should be doing. And that takes time and it takes, you know, and it can be a process of really comforting yourself, you know, to get to that place and putting a balm on the wounds of the year so that they can heal, so that then, you know, you can come out stronger in the springtime. And, you know, really just recognizing that those fear and those resistances that come up are a fear of knowing ourselves. And so, you know, coming to know ourselves is an everyday effort. And there's like a season that nature has created, which is very favorable for us turning inward and seeing the deeper places, right? And in Chinese medicine, the kidneys are like the deepest organ. They're the water element. They're the, you know, the root. And so that's where the energy is in the winter. Is it's going into that water element. It's going way down into the roots. And so it's like that movement of energy on an earthly level, on a seasonal level, is moving us naturally down into our roots. And so, you know, if we can be there and align with that, we get to get really deep. You know, your meditations can be much easier to get there and much deeper than, you know, in the summer when the energy is so outward and that, you know, the sun is so high and you know, we tend to be more naturally outward. Plants are, you know, fully expressed and flowering and fruiting, and that's, you know, that's what happens for us too. So yes, I hope that answered your question.
Absolutely. No, it's beautiful. And if you can share a little bit, you know, this building of being proactive versus reactive, like right now, globally, we're witnessing in different regions of the world, especially here in North America, reactivity. And that reactivity isn't always beneficial to the psyche, to the physical body, to the spiritual body. If you can share a little bit about proactivity and then how it naturally will build on, like we were sharing a little bit about sugar and how, for me personally, when that's removed and I realize that that's not the most beneficial thing for my system, then I can be a lot more proactive. Maybe how I want to engage with that or how I want to satiate that taste. So if you can share a little bit about how we could be, you know, prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a daily meditation. It's a daily, like, labor to, you know, to control our reactions. And I think what helps us is to, you know, to be grounded, to connect into nature, to connect into the seasons, to feed ourselves and nourish ourselves as much as we can. And, you know, part of that is really this idea that we do need to look at ourselves. We do need to, you know, overcome the fear of knowing ourselves, because I think, you know, when we're reacting, a lot of times it's out of a kind of a blame, or we're looking outward at something that feels like a threat to us, and we kind of react by going into a kind of a victim mentality, right? And right. So part of coming to know ourselves is recognizing that there really is no separation between ourselves and the other. And so, you know, as crazy and offensive as this may sound, like that, you know, person that you're pointing finger at in your life is actually, you know, you have those same tendencies inside of you. And that's partly why they're provoking them, and they're things that you don't want to see, and they're things, you know, and it may not be as just as black and white as, I'm trying to say this delicately because I don't want people to shut down to what I'm saying. Because I've heard this in different contexts, and in some ways it can come across as really, you know, like disempowering too, like, oh, well, this is all my fault, or this is all, you know,
right.
But it is a sense of taking personal responsibility for everything, which isn't the same as taking blame for everything, but it is looking at, like, okay, what seeds of that, you know, behavior are within me, and why is this rattling me so much, and what, and I know you're so aligned with the teachings of compassion. Like, compassion is really about, you know, looking at that other person and being like, wow, you know, that could happen to me too, or there've been moments in my life when I have felt like that too, or wow, how, even though that seems absolutely foreign to me in this moment, like, how can I understand that? How can I seek to understand that? And also, in the midst of that egoic presentation and you know, abhorrent behavior that I'm seeing, how can I actually still love the being that is present in the heart of that individual, or the heart of that community, or the heart of that, you know, nation? Like, how can I see into the heart of that being and have compassion and have love and have understanding, seek for understanding? And it's, you know, it's, so it starts with us knowing ourselves. Starts with us seeing, like, wow, as crazy as that may sound, like, there have been moments when I fell prey to racist thinking or misogynist thinking, or, you know, when I was overly aggressive in my way of speaking or something like that, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I, you know, maybe I didn't go that far, but I can see where that comes from. Can understand where that comes from, and it's in me too. And so I, as hard as it is, I'm, you know, I seek to have compassion for this, you know, and to take responsibility for it in our own way.
Yeah.
Because if there is war on the planet, it is because there is war within us.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Right. And yeah. So we have to be courageous. You know, if anything, it drives us to be even more bold and more courageous in our deep dive into who we are inside of us, and knowing that at our core we are the light, we are the essence, we are the beauty and the truth, but that in between that light and beauty and truth are many layers of misunderstanding and illusion. And so, you know, we have to see those layers. We have to seek to understand. We have to seek to understand the egoic expressions that we see in others, as, you know, we have even a tiny shred of personal responsibility for those too. And it's a hard thing to face. And again, like, I think that's part of our fear, right? It's like that fear of knowing ourselves is the fear of recognizing that I have a shred of personal responsibility for this. You know, it's much easier to go, no, somebody else, you know, voted this way, or somebody else chose that, or I'm, you know, in some ways it takes away our power and our responsibility when we seek the causes outside of ourselves. But when we actually seek the causes within us, then we're, you know, we have the potential to have real compassion and to see transformation. And that's where that, you know, that's where global peace is going to come from. It's from each of us finding it within us and establishing it as our home, and establishing ourselves there as permanent residents. Like, this is where I live. I live in peace.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say that I fully reside in a peaceful country within myself yet. You know, I know that there are many days when I'm at war with myself, I'm at war with, you know, nonviolent war, but like sometimes in your thoughts, you know, there's just so much struggle and so much conflict, and that is part of the problem. Maybe we can say that's the root of the problem, right? So we have to establish ourselves in the territory of peace, so that we can be those beacons and we can be the peacemakers and be the, you know, be the positive change bringers. So, you know, I would just try to circle that back to saying, like, this is our season to make peace with ourselves, right? It's our season to make peace with our year. It's our season to really nourish, be inward, be, you know, moments of reaction. It's like, we have to remember to be humble, because if we meet that arrogance and pride with our own arrogance and pride, that's, you know, that's where anger is born. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's adding, you know, it's like, exactly. If you come and you find a fire on the street and you pour gasoline on it, it's going to be a problem. But if you meet it with water,
yeah,
it's a very different place, right? So I think we have to, in some ways, meet this particular time of transition with the measure of water, you know, with the element of water, with the season of water. Allow it to be a season where this allows us, as much as we need to, you know, express our truth, we also need to go inward and really find our truth again. It's like, wow, okay, this is clearly something that has happened on the planet for a reason, to wake us up, you know, to remind us that those tendencies are still in us. As hard as we've all been working, they're still there. Haven't gone away. You know, it might have been put under a wet blanket for a while.
Yeah, several. Well, two things. Earlier you talked about the season of fall being a great time for, like, less speech, less, you know, that inward space. But if you can share a little bit about the value of really being mindful with our speech, if we're in a season of less speech, let's say, what can be understood during that time of reflection, contemplation, and listening?
Yeah. Wow. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. We just did we just led a 30-day cleanse, collaborated with some good friends and led a cleanse program. And part of it, one of the invitations within it, was to do a word cleanse. And it was something that I've been kind of thinking about for a couple of years as, you know, we go and we do these cleansing processes. We're really focused on our food and we're really focused on our nutrition and supplements and things like that. But there's a teaching in one of the Gospels where there's a group of vegetarians that come to the Master Jesus, and they ask him, you know, what is, and it's almost like they're trying to lay a trap for him, saying like, okay, well, we know that, you know, being vegetarian is more spiritual than me eating meat. And so we're going to test him and see what his answer is. If, you know, so what do you think about eating meat? Right. And the answer is so beautiful, is that, you know, it matters less what goes into your mouth than what comes out.
Hmm.
And that, like, that for me is so profound. And I've just been sitting with that for, since I heard it, I've heard it for a few years now, but just it continues to, like, strike me on deeper and deeper levels. And it's something I've kind of always known intuitively. I tend to be a little bit more on the quiet side. And it feels like maybe a little bit of a self-preservation mechanism, but it's also just kind of my nature. But, you know, that doesn't always mean that internally I'm not spinning my wheels and that my negative self-talk is not going every bit as fast as anyone else's. And so I would include in that, you know, in that idea of talking in words, that our internal talk and our self-dialogue is part of that external dialogue. Some of us are better at controlling what we actually say out loud. We're not as good at controlling what's going on in our minds. Some of us are better at getting those words out. And you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that is better, but some of us have more of a tendency to just say everything that's going on in our minds. And so I just, for me, it's an interesting process of looking at, can we start to cleanse our words? Can we start to, you know, and a starting place might just be, okay, can I talk a little bit less? Can I say a little bit less? Can I be, and you see this with, you know, in I know you've worked a lot with Native Americans, that they tend to be very, very conscious about how the choice of words. There's not a lot of chatting. There's, you know, there's a very different awareness of gossip and sort of mindless talk that we have the tendency to want to fill space with talk, even if it's just talking about the weather. It's kind of meaningless chatter. Talk about a TV show that you just watched. Just talk about anything because it's uncomfortable in the silence. And so, you know, that just even starting to think about that tendency, like, okay, am I okay when it's quiet? You know, or am I talking to myself? Am I just spinning around in my head with, you know, endless chatter because it's so quiet that I want to, like, turn on music or turn on the television to hear no, something going. You know, it's part of that turning inward in this quiet season. It is a quiet season. It should be a quiet season. Like, I love, one of my favorite Christmas carols is Silent Night.
Me too.
and I love, you know, I love, my favorite moment around the holidays is when everyone else goes to sleep and I'll sneak out into the living room and, you know, leave the Christmas tree lights on or whatever the decorations are on, just those, like, very low, dim, kind of quiet lights, and just sit in that silence. And it's like, like the darkest night of the year, the longest night of the year, like, that is so profound. Like, you can hear the silence, you know, you feel it. And so, yeah, I would say that, you know, this is a really powerful time to, you know, to be very careful with our words, right? We don't really need to gossip or blame about anything that's happening or even talk about it to too many people, because it disperses the inner experience that is being offered to us. And if we can take the, you know, the emotions that are coming up for us and really utilize them as signposts on the road to coming to know ourselves better and to finding these kind of root emotions that are moving us without our awareness, then, you know, this could be a really powerful and transformative time on a personal, but then, you know, by extension on a collective level. Whereas if we kind of just satisfy ourselves with raising our voices, so to speak, and speaking all the reactions that we're having, I think we are missing part of the work that we have to do. You know, I'm not saying it's not important to speak out against the things that we feel strongly about, but to make sure those words are very well chosen, right? To not lose the truth of what we're feeling in the reaction of the moment, or to taint, you know, the purity of your heart's indignation at a wrongdoing with anger, and blame and shame and, you know, that reaction. That if you're able to sit with and meditate and really come to the essence of what it is that you have to say, that it's infinitely more powerful when you say it than if you just blurt it out all messy and sloppy. And again, that's, you know, that's sometimes we have to do that too to get to the deeper truth. But I really feel like, you know, for many of us, we could really benefit by speaking less, you know, tuning into what the internal dialogue is, seeing if we can even slow that down so that it's speaking less, and coming to those kind of core essential truths that we do need to share. We do need to speak, and maybe writing them first so that they, you know, they have a chance to really refine them, like you were, you know, trying to write a beautiful poem or a speech, you know. It's, you know, those words become, you know, have the chance to become immortal, you know, to really make a powerful impact.
Yeah, beautifully said. And within that silence, sometimes before you blurt those things out, you can realize what your issue is inside. Because that fire that gets going, like you were sharing earlier on, not to scare people, but to realize, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, like when you're angry about the way someone is, there's something deeper inside that's wanting to be understood, healed, and transformed.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you do speak, you're speaking from a place not of anger and blame, but of compassion.
Right.
It's like, and you listen to the Dalai Lama speak, and he's never like blaming anyone. There's never a shame. There's this deep, deep understanding, right?
Yeah.
That someone who's lived through, you know, trauma that maybe most of us can't even really imagine, and yet has got the most joyful outlook of anyone, you know, you may have ever been in the presence of. And it comes from that, like, deep understanding of, like, oh, okay, you know, just like, you know, when we see our children throwing a temper tantrum, you know, you might at first be tempted to just be like, stop it, you know, no,
yep.
No. But then, you know, you can go, oh, God, yeah, that did not work out the way we wanted it to, and I'm so sorry, and I get it. You know, that's really hard. It's hard to understand when things don't work out your way. And, you know, I get that you're mad, you're frustrated, you're feeling all, you know, it's like a very different response. And you can see how it disarms kids and helps them to come back to their center, and how, you know, in a way that's what we're all doing. It's throwing temper tantrums, and there's something in there that we can, you know, we can see and learn from. And acknowledge for each other and help each other see. And, you know, it comes from that place of self-knowing and compassion.
Well said. As I always try to remind myself, oh, I did that.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, I did that. There's no reason to complain.
I tried that one too. How's that going for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Eric, I know we're coming up on our time. If you can share, we're going to have you back. We'll get in our groove with the seasons. Maybe that's how we can honor this agreement. If you can share, I'll put the links there, but your Seasons of Change and your website, best places to get those, that would be great.
Yes. Okay, great. Yeah, I love it. And thank you. And I do, you know, I do really feel like this is a nice thing to do for yourself. It's an herbal blend that's based on Chinese and Ayurvedic with seasonal wisdom and timeless wisdom. It's immune tonics and astragalus and turmeric and goji, and it's got a little bit of maca, it's got medicinal mushrooms in there, it's got something that's from our native in California, which is our native lilac, red root, rhodiola. It's a really nourishing, and it's got all the warming spices, cinnamon, ginger, cardamom, licorice, nutmeg, and this beautiful rooibos red it's just really delicious and comforting in a beautiful way, because you can make yourself this nice big pumpkin spice latte or two a day if you want, and you don't have to feel bad about it. And it's going to strengthen your immunity, strengthen your digestive system, help to lower sugar cravings. So you're really doing something good for yourself at the same time as you're indulging yourself. And that's what we want to seek, right? We want to seek things that have that kind of sense of like, I'm not depriving myself. I'm taking care of myself. And this feels really good. It's like a warm bath, right? Like that is a good thing for you to do. So yes, at essentialmedicina.com, you can get those, and you just have to go to the shop tab. On the website, and you'll see that Seasons Change Spice Latte blend, as well as the other two blends, the Mind's Eye and the Adrenal. And please email me if you know you have questions, or my email is eric@essentialmedicina.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions about herbs or anything else we talked about. And yeah, I really look forward to continuing the conversation. It always feels like a magical little flow that opens up here. So thank you. Thank you for the space
that you hold,
and for doing this, and for being persistent on our pilgrimage to meet each other.
I really appreciate all the work you're doing, and I think we can welcome in the mind's eye as we enter the period of winter to vision and prepare for the new year. So, Eric, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Thank you for all you do.
Once again, I want to thank Eric for joining us today. And as inspired, please connect to his work and the links below. And just in the honor of taking a pause, nourishing that inner landscape and slowing down, we're going to exit out with the Medicine Buddha. Take some time to listen to self. See where you can be with self and see what arrives. Until next time, this is she signing out with a full heart, a soft gaze, a gentle smile, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply. Deada om bekanze, bekanze ma bekanze, radze samodgate soha. Deada Soha, Deata.